Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. But before we begin, Jim, we must note that whatever you think of the British monarchy, a major milestone day today for Queen Elizabeth, setting the record for the longest reign in British history, nearly 64 years, at 63 years and change, passing Queen Victoria. Congratulations to her. And it's worth noting, I don't think a lot of people will mention this today, she almost didn't get to this record because 27 years ago, in America at a baseball game, she was nearly assassinated by by Reggie Jackson, who was brainwashed by Ricardo Montalban. Only Los Angeles Police Detective Frank Drebin prevented that tragedy and made today possible.
You know, these little-known chapters of history. And as I believe it was, Lieutenant Drebin said, no matter how silly it may seem to us to have a monarchy, we have an obligation to be gracious hosts. So congratulations, royals.
Yes, exactly. All right, on to the good martini. That was from The Naked Gun, in case you didn't know.
For both listeners out there, we're like, I don't remember that happening. Reggie Jackson? Did he do jail? That was O.J.
The good martini comes to us courtesy of Politico. Two Senate chairmen want to give immunity to Hillary Clinton's former top IT staffer, who's planning to invoke his Fifth Amendment right not to answer incriminating questions from congressional investigators. Senate Judiciary Chairman Chuck Grassley and Homeland Security and Government Affairs Chairman Ron Johnson hope an immunity agreement will allow Brian Pagliano to testify about the former Secretary of State's unusual email server setup. They sent a letter to Pagliano and his lawyer this week asking him to, quote, make yourself available to provide information. The committees need the unique information that you likely have in order to exercise their oversight functions under the Constitution, which are unrelated to any potential prosecution or criminal inquiry. Jim, this is exactly the idea that you floated several days ago when we found out that Mr. Pagliano was planning to invoke the Fifth after he was subpoenaed to testify before the Benghazi committee, as well as other congressional committees. So the fact that this card will likely be played means we might actually get some answers.
Yeah, and that seems like it's a win-win. If we have a circumstance that is he talks, then we get some real answers. And if he says, look, Hillary told me this was all fine. She never expressed any concern about using classified information on an unclassified system. She told me this way, you know, there's all kinds of stuff it's conceivable this guy could end up saying if he says, all right, I'm not at risk for prosecution, so I can spill my guts and tell everything. The flip side is if he says no, then it makes kind of ratchets up the level of suspicion even more that this is a guy who's now been given guaranteed immunity from prosecution. Now you start wondering if going back to, you know, God, who was
Susan McDougal?
Thank you. Thank you. You know exactly. Well, other Clintonite low-level staffers who are willing to fall on their swords. Or if he starts putting out signals, I'd really like a pardon right around now. It's kind of interesting. So we don't know exactly where this is going to lead, but it's a good sign, and it sounds like investigators are taking the steps that would be necessary to keep this investigation moving and not getting bogged down.
Indeed. All right, on to the bad martini now. And just yesterday, we were talking about Colin Powell coming out in favor of the Iran deal, Joe Manchin coming out against it at a point where it didn't matter anymore in terms of being able to sustain the president's veto. In vain, apparently, Jim, I said, well, hopefully we can scare up two more Democrats to at least force the president to veto this and see whatever good that might accomplish by making it go one step farther. Not going to happen. There are now at least 41, and reports this morning suggest 42 Democrats ready to support the Iran deal, meaning they are most likely also willing to block the rejection resolution in terms of a filibuster, meaning the president will never even have to veto this. This reminds me of two things. First of all, once again, heck of a job, Bob Corker. And secondly, you have said in the past, anytime you rely on Democrats to get the right thing done, you're always going to end up disappointed. And it looks like we're right there again.
Yeah. I'm also kind of further infuriated, Greg, by a comment from Lindsey Graham last night talking to Hugh Hewitt. Hugh puts it to him directly. Do you regret voting for Corker, Menendez, Cardin now that this has worked out this way? And he says, oh, no, 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 no. It gives us a chance to have the debate. One, maybe not. But two, Greg, and there are times you see something and you're really infuriated and angry. And then there are times I'm just utterly befuddled. Why is it considered a victory to have a debate on perhaps the biggest, most sweeping and consequential foreign policy change in a generation. Well, we got to debate it. Yay! Great. You know, but isn't that something you just kind of expect? It's like, it seems like the Senate Republicans saying, "Mother, may I?" Oh, we got to debate it. One, it kind of assumes that this debate would not have occurred if they hadn't had the Corker deal. And I just don't believe that's the case. I reject this idea that otherwise this Iran deal would have escaped public attention and nobody would have talked about it. That one that's kind of baffling. The second thing is that, like, you should have a debate over something this big. And so on the one hand, like, if you know, people have been noticed, and you and I have had discussions in the past, and we may not see completely eye to eye on this, but, like, look, if the filibuster is interfering with the ability to hold a vote on the biggest and most consequential foreign policy change in 30 years, then hell yeah, you nuke the filibuster, right? Well, you know, at that point, the filibuster is not protecting the rights of the minority. It's ensuring that big things don't get voted on and that nobody gets held accountable for this position when we see mushroom clouds on the horizon. You know, I'm just baffled and disgusted by this, and I feel like they're, you know, Senate Republicans, this represents an abject surrender on this. And not only is it an abject surrender, they refuse to acknowledge it as an abject surrender. The polling now has approval in the 20-some percent and disapproval at 49%. And this thing is going to sail through without even a solid vote on it. I mean, you start looking at this and really concluding that our system of government is broken, Greg.
Unbelievable. There's still two last-ditch efforts here. I don't know if it's coming too late. First of all, Louis Gohmert of Texas in the House is pursuing the idea that you laid out in the Morning Jolt a few weeks ago, and that's just declaring this to be a treaty and then voting it down. Peter Roskam, also a Republican in the House, he's from Illinois, wants to add time to the clock here because he says the full deal hasn't been submitted to Congress because of those side deals that the administration failed to actually make available to lawmakers. So do you feel like that's rearranging deck chairs, or is there actually an avenue in one of those?
On the Gohmert plan at this point, you might as well give it a try. I mean, look, if you believe, as I do, that Iran is not likely to keep their word. In fact, very unlikely to keep their word. And even if they do keep their word, it basically means in about a decade, they'll be very close to a nuclear weapon and be able to assemble the parts in about a month, you know, maybe 2 months. Experts disagree on how quickly, but pretty darn quickly. So basically, this deal just sets up a nuclear crisis with Iran a decade from now. It's not a good deal, all right? If you want to avoid that, then you have to reject this deal. And you have to, you know, hope by starting January 2017, have a better president in there who will force the, you know, reenact sanctions, get tough on the Iranians, find other forms of leverage, and get them to make bigger concessions instead of giving away the store like this. The Roskam idea, it's interesting, and I think it indicates just how much the administration agrees to things and then forgets about it. All statements from Barack Obama come with an expiration date, all of them. So if you can, you know, hold up the deal based on the fact that the administration isn't keeping its word to Congress, great. I just think we basically got a rogue presidency here that basically doesn't care what Congress says. It doesn't care what the courts say. It's going to do what it's going to do until someone stops them. I'm kind of struck by how acquiescent Congress seems to this arrangement.
And just in case you thought perhaps because the deal was secure, at least at this point, it looks like the Congress is not going to reject the deal, that Iran might be saying, hey, good job, America. Maybe we can work together. No, they're saying Israel's going to be destroyed in the next 25 years. And U.S. is still the great Satan, is how Khamenei said it in his Twitter account. So obviously, fences have been mended there, and we can totally trust them because, as we know, we have to basically trust them with this inspections regime. So,
partner in peace, partner in peace.
Also in favor of the Iran deal, moving to the crazy martini, is Hillary Clinton. She said today that there's absolutely no reason to trust the Iranians, but yeah, it's probably the best deal we can get, so you might as well get on board. Besides, she helped to set up the framework for this while she was Secretary of State. But the main reason she's in the crazy martini today is because she was on ABC News last night, finally deciding after first never apologizing and then quasi-apologizing but not really sure. In her Andrea Mitchell interview late last week, she went with ABC anchor David Muir and had this to say.
But I do think I could have and should have done a better job answering questions earlier. I really didn't perhaps appreciate the need to do that. What I had done was allowed. It was above board. But in retrospect, certainly, as I look back at it now, even though it was allowed, I should have used two accounts, one for personal, one for work-related emails. That was a mistake. I'm sorry about that. I take responsibility.
Jim, first of all, I think she drank the decaf yesterday. She was very, very subdued in that interview. But there's more to the story. Yesterday, we didn't have time for this in the podcast yesterday, but Hillary's going to be more spontaneous. It was the big news yesterday, but not in this case. Even in her first appearance after saying that she was going to be more spontaneous, you report today in the corner that, according to the New York Times, last week Mrs. Clinton's aides showed a video of one of her recent news conferences to a New Hampshire focus group of independents and Democrats. According to a Democrat briefed on the focus group, whose account was confirmed by a person in her campaign, participants said they wanted to hear more from Mrs. Clinton about the issue. The focus group also showed that the email issue was drowning out nearly everything else that Mrs. Clinton was hoping to communicate to voters, something Mrs. Clinton and her husband have complained about to friends. So they want her to apologize, and then you can tell, given the lack of sincerity there, Jim, her basic attitude is, okay, I said I'm sorry. Are we done?
Greg, I am about to be more spontaneous. Can you feel the spontaneity already? Here's the thing. My colleague Jonah likes to point out he believes that everything Hillary Clinton does is because of polls, that is ultimately where you can see the impetus for all of her actions. This is almost a parody of that, in which they felt like they were doing fine on this email issue, which was, oh, wipe it? Did I wipe the server? You mean like with a cloth or something? Dismissing it, or the Snapchat jokes, or basically acting like this is no big deal. Now she's, you know, saying she apologizes, but she doesn't really... She's sorry she used two systems. And as Jonah points out, it's not like, Greg, were you demanding an apology?
No. Answers.
You see, we want facts. We want to know what's going on with it. You know, we want to know whether any of the information on there got in the hands of foreign intelligence, whether it was hacked. There really is no other explanation for this other than her trying to avoid congressional subpoenas and requests and oversight and FOIA requests and things like this. At some point, she's going to be up under oath. The interesting thing will be whether she claims, you know, a vast right-wing conspiracy or, oh, fellas, we all get so confused with this technology. Who's to say who's right and who's wrong? Whether she tries to use that dodge either. My guess is that neither one will particularly work. The planned spontaneity coupled with the, look, the focus group said it's not working, so that's what's going to change our tone. It's kind of like the antithesis to spontaneity, and it kind of indicates, you know, it's a spontaneous planned response to focus group tests.
Are we on the relaunch, the re-relaunch, the re-re-relaunch? Where are we in this list of Hillary Clinton?
I saw her referred to as Hillary 5.3 with new patches for humanity and things like that. But I still find it glitchy myself. So maybe it'll work better on yours. I'm using a Mac. So.
Will there be more versions of this campaign or more iPhones by the time she's done with this campaign?
There you go. Yeah. Nearly certain. Yeah, Apple has their new announcement today. Maybe they're unveiling the new Hillary.
Could be. This one's truly spontaneous. Jim, have a great day. Talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks a lot, Greg. See you tomorrow.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.